Hey, growth speakers. Stacy here. And if you're in today's conversation, I know you're going to get sparked with a lot of hope and you're going to enjoy this one. So before we begin, don't forget to smash follow, hit like, and share this episode so more survivors can start to heal like they deserve to heal. Now get ready to rise together. Tap those buttons now and let's thrive hand in hand. Alrighty, everybody. So I have a really great person on the show today. And I just want, today we're joined by trauma healing and advocate Lisa Tickle. She's the host of the podcast, Healing and Growing Hand in Hand, and the founder of 6 Week Women's Childhood Abuse Healing Workshop and the Women's Healing Community, a service herself. Lisa's mission is simple yet profound: help shorten the pain of childhood abuse survivors by giving them a voice, bringing their expert insights, and raising public awareness about hidden forms of abuse. So, if you or someone is on a healing journey, this conversation will offer you both practical tools and deep hope. Lisa, I am so happy to have you on the show. I really appreciate you coming on to share your story, your journey, and to share your advice with everybody. Now, what was your defining moments when you realized in your own healing story that you could become a roadmap for thousands of other survivors?
Oh, I actually discovered that in my 30s, when actually I was involved in the original Women's Childhood Abuse Healing Workshop. And it was through, at the time, it was through my church. And I had gone through the workshop myself, and there was such a connection I got with these women and the leaders. And that's what kind of sparked. And of course, I've always wanted to help people, and I thought this is a great way to do it. And so when the leaders were ready to retire, they actually reached out to myself and a friend of mine. And so we were able to manage that for 8 years. We co-facilitated it together, and it was amazing. And I knew the very first workshop I did, this is it. Like, there's no amount of money you could pay me. Just watching these women, begin their healing journey, and by the end of the workshop, they're different women, and they've had a measure of healing. It's just wonderful.
Oh my God, that sounds wonderful. Now, can you share a snapshot of your childhood experience and the first time you recognized it was abuse and not the normal life that everybody, knows and, has stigmatized, quote unquote, normal life?
Well, my abuse went back as far as I can remember. It was all abuse except for sexual. A lot of it started with my brother. My brother was 7 years older than me, and I just remember him always yelling at me, calling me names, getting physical with me, and then at a very young age for him, he started doing drugs, which made the situation even worse. I think I knew pretty young, probably around 7 or 8, that things weren't normal at home, because when I think back on it, I didn't want to hang out at home. I always wanted to go over to a friend's house. And of course, that's where you start to see, oh, wait a minute, the lifestyle here is very different than at home. Mom's not screaming, the kids aren't, beating each other up. So I think I discovered that at a young age. I know I fully became aware in my teenage years, but as I got a little bit older, into my early teens, I started putting on weight. And the reason why is, a lot of times that's common with, junior high girls. But for me, I also started emotionally eating because of the abuse. But I didn't understand that. And then I had this mother who lived on cigarettes and coffee and was stick thin. And so, and she loved showing me off. She loved dressing me up. I was a pretty little girl, and she loved to dress me up. Well, all of a sudden, I wasn't a pretty little girl. And so the abuse started with her, and it was the verbal. And a lot of it was, she got to the point where she wouldn't buy me clothes. She said, you have to lose weight. And it just got worse from there. And the sad part is, I lost her at 16, from breast cancer. So we never had a great relationship. And with my dad was just kind of a, he was emotionally unavailable, and he was also had a significant amount of fear. So when my brother would get fired up and start on his rampage, my dad would physically go and hide, physically. So there was no protection. The guy that should have protected wasn't there. So that's kind of a snapshot of the early years.
Yeah. Now, what were the early steps or missteps on the healing journey? How did you shape the methods that you use today?
Well, it's interesting because, and I think I was sharing this earlier, is, I'm almost 62 years old. And so, back when I was on my healing journey, I was pretty much by myself. There wasn't the modalities, there wasn't the podcasts and the books and the, that wasn't out there. So it really, a lot of it was me going to counseling, just regular counseling, and me working closely with God and just working within myself. I knew at a young age there was something inside me that wasn't okay. At the time, I didn't understand it was pain.
Yes.
That's what I was seeking after, is what I'm trying to get rid of. And
Right.
so really I'd done some, a little bit of work, but when I took that workshop, that was like in early 2000s, that's where there was definitely a switch in me, and a little bit accelerated. But it was really the last 10 years, or actually 15 years, where there's been
Yeah.
significant, because there's trauma therapy now, which I've taken, and some modalities that I've done as well.
I love that. Now, your podcast rests on survivor stories and expert insights, awareness, and prevention. Why did you choose these four pillars, and how do they work together to shorten the pain for listeners?
Well, this might sound a little bit selfish, but when I created the podcast, it really was, what did I need back then
Yeah.
that I didn't have? And one of them was a voice.
Yeah.
So many survivors, our voice gets shut down. And then I wanted to bring experts on that could put information out there, golden nuggets to help people, if there's some kind of connection where someone could go, oh, okay, maybe I can go get therapy, something that will connect them. And then awareness, there's so many areas of abuse that we're not aware of. Here's a quick example. There are over 20 million children in the United States that do sports, and a third of them are still being abused. That's a
Wow,
lot. That's a
that's
lot.
a lot.
That's a lot. So there's statistics like that, and there's areas like that. So that's what the awareness was. And then the prevention is just even this area is kind of more like with parents and helping them, especially parents like me who have gone through their, and how that they can be helped to prevent passing it along to their
Right.
children and raise them different. So it really was, what did I need back then that would have helped me? That's how I built the workshop. That's how I built the community. It was all, what did I need back then that would have helped me accelerate my healing?
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great, because so many times we feel alone and a lot, and especially back in the day, it was like you kept those things to yourself. Everybody
Yeah.
used to, shh, shh, don't talk about it. These are not things to talk about outside the home, and if you tried to look for information, there wasn't much information in the libraries or anywhere to be found. A lot of times things were written by doctors in medical terminology
Yeah.
and went right over your head, and for people like you and I, there was no direction or help, and very little to offer, people that were going through any type of childhood trauma or abuse.
And there were also weren't the laws in place to protect children
No.
until the late 1980s and early
Yeah.
1990s. There was no laws on the books to protect children. So, in my case, if my parents called the police, I don't know, called the police on my brother for hitting me, I don't know if they would have done anything.
Right. It's terrible, but a lot of times, I don't think they would have done anything either, because a lot of times they would just come in, settle things down, and walk right out,
Right. They don't realize the whole story behind this one incident, that this isn't the only time. This is numerous times. It's happening over and over.
Later on, DIFAS came in, and they started using DIFAS, as a organization to try to help. But sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. Depending, they took kids out of the home, but sometimes they were put in homes just as bad or worse.
Worse.
So it was like a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
So which pillar has surprised you by resonating the most with your audience, and why?
Oh, that's a good question. I know the experts make a big difference, but I think the stories, and I
Yeah.
think it's because it's really a simple way for everyone to connect. Because when a survivor is sharing his or her stories, because I have men and women on my podcast,
Yeah.
and especially when they share those dark moments within them, and somebody else can go, oh my gosh, that person thinks that way too.
Yeah.
Oh, or that happens to them and they felt that way. It's a way to connect. I think that that's the one. They're all helpful for sure, but there's something for the survivors and also the survivors' loved ones, you know, because like my husband has to kind of put up with some shenanigans from me that, you know, other husbands don't. And he doesn't understand. And so it helps him to understand. So I think that that's the one that has surprised me the most. And so many people wanting to come on and share their stories and be very bold and, you know, detailed.
I met my husband very early on, like at 19. So, he was with me a long time. So he saw a lot of things that went on. And so he understood. He didn't experience that at his own home, but he understood just from witnessing it from me. But it's really, it's hard. But when you share stories, it's very powerful. When you share stories of other people, just listening to other people, speak. You can, and you don't have to relate to the whole story. It could be a phrase from that story, and then all of a sudden, you feel this, aha moment, and you feel, wow, I'm not alone. And I found that sometimes when you share your stories and you listen to other stories, it's very painful. But when you start to when you those pushed down feelings, those emotions start to resonate and they start to come up. And then once you're able to learn how to deal with those emotions, that's when the healing process starts. And it's painful, but once you start healing those unsettled emotions, then it's like once you get over the hill, then you can see the rainbow and it's a whole life from there.
You described it beautifully because that's one of the things I say, you know, for those who've never had like that aha moment or that first really kind of measure of healing, don't know what that feels like on the other side. And there's no way that you can tell them to the so they'll understand. But once they experience it, I know that's what motivated me. It's like, ooh, I like the way that feels. Like that little piece is behind me now. I want to go for more of that. And that's why it's, you know, the beginning of the healing journey is the toughest. It does get easier. There's definitely very difficult moments, but it definitely gets easier to manage.
Yes, it definitely does. Now, walk us through your 6 week structure. What happens in week one, and what breakthroughs are common by week six?
Oh gosh, it's so cool. So the first night, this is the only night really that you're going to kind of tell your story. And you're only going to tell one quick short story, the first one that pops into your head. And people are like, ugh, but I will tell you what that first night does. That first night connects the women because so many of them have never shared their story and they share it for the first time in there. And all of a sudden, someone else is like, that's where the connection starts. And by the end of that first night, you're already seeing the connections with each other. So that's beautiful. So then the next couple of nights after that are we're doing some more kind of like little girl work, kind of working with the little girl a little bit and kind of understanding our emotions a little bit. And then we dive deep into the work. And that's the different things to help you out, like self-awareness and understanding your triggers and your perspective and so these different areas. And so and those nights there is like a small teaching, but then there's more group interaction where we all talk about it and exercises to help them understand it. And then they do have homework. So we do a little teaching, we do a group exercise and teach them how to implement this new technique. And then they've got homework that's going to help them bring it into their life personally. So
That's wonderful.
by the end of the 6 weeks, if they've done the work, they've come a long way already. That's almost like a, I don't know, booster.
I remember speaking to this one woman, and she said, she came from a household that her father was an alcoholic, and when he got drunk, he'd say really mean things to her. And then I was talking to her one day, and I was telling her, "Don't you see these beautiful things in you?" And she says, "When someone tells you these things over and over and over again, you tend to believe it after a while." And that was how her childhood affected her all the way through into her life, with such low self-esteem and self-doubt. It stopped her from excelling in life because everything that her father kept saying over and over and over again, she started to believe it because if dad says so, it must be true, kind of thing.
That's the hardest part is when it comes from our caretakers, our parents, you know, when they're saying this stuff to us. I mean, like we were saying earlier, that's our foundation. And if the people that we're supposed to trust the most is saying that to us, of course we're gonna believe. My brother told me when I was 11, we were having a normal conversation like you and I are having. And we were in the car, and out of the blue, he just said, "Well, you know that none of mom and dad's friends like you, right? You know that." And I remember at that moment, it felt like somebody punched me in the chest. And I immediately believed him because I
Right.
think it was the way he presented it. He wasn't mad. He was
Yeah.
just like informing me. And I just believed it. And I carried that belief. It still pops up in my head. I still have to be careful. Yeah, that one hugely affected me. So then I went on the hunt for the next 30, 40 years looking for people to love me.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely. When you grow up and you know, I was always looking for that family, that love, all those things in my heart, that the holes were, every time I got hurt, there was another hole in my heart. There was another hole in my heart. So for the longest time in my life, I went searching to try to find those people to fill that hole, when I really had to really work on myself and I had to fill my own holes and satisfy. Love myself. And that was the thing is that I was looking for people to validate and give me what I didn't have, but I was the person that needed to work on myself and I needed to be able to produce those things for myself, not get them from somebody else. And I think that's one of the biggest problems is that people go hunting for, the things that they didn't get in their childhood years, but you can't rely on other people to provide those things for you. And you're never going to be truly happy if someone else has given it to you and you can't fix those holes and those wounds inside you.
Exactly. And that is so key, is that we do need to have a healthy, loving relationship with ourselves. And that was like, I used to be so lonely, right? I was so lonely. I just remember being feeling so lonely. I'm not lonely anymore. And I'm like, when did that stop? And it was when I started building a relationship with myself and I started seeing the things in me that were good. There were good things in me, it wasn't all this bad stuff.
I love it. So for someone who's hesitating to join your program, what's one myth about the organization healing programs that you'd like to bust and address?
Well, so many people think it's too late or they're too broken. Those are too big. I'm just too old. I'm too broken. First of all, you're not broken. You might feel like you're broken, but you're not broken. This is all fixable. It is. It's going to be work. And you're not too old. And let me tell you this, I had a 75-year-old woman come to the workshop. She had never told her story, not even to her husband of over 50 plus years. And she did the work. And at the end, she was a different woman. And about a year later, her granddaughter came up to thank us because their relationship, her grandparents' relationship, was the best it had ever been. She'd never seen them so happy together. So you're never too old and you're not broken.
I agree with you. I've heard that comment many times. I'm too old. It's too late to change. Or I've heard even, one woman who was Italian. She goes, she came from one of those tight-knit Italian families in New York, and she's like, Italian women don't talk to others. So I suggested go for therapy. And Italian women don't talk to other people about their problems, because it was that tight knit, keep it to yourself inside the family type personality. So, the best thing you could do, I think, is to share with other people to learn how to get it out. Once you can get the story out and you can start sharing, I think it becomes easier and easier to talk about. And then you start to heal yourself because you're getting all those feelings outside some people are even fearful. They come from childhood trauma. They're fearful of really opening up and really sharing their story. And they're afraid sometimes, that, because who they're married to or, people house, they know that they're going to get mad if they start talking about, certain things. And so they hold it all in and they keep all that trauma inside them and it ends up really destroying you. 70% of illnesses are caused by stress. I say that so many times, all that toxin we keep inside just destroys us if we don't heal ourselves from childhood trauma.
And they have found that, and there is definitely a link between unresolved trauma and autoimmune disease.
Yes, there's a big link. I was thinking about that when I was saying that to you because, it really breaks down the walls of your immune system and then you really open yourself up to all these different illnesses, all these different problems. They start coming And you start getting all these different issues, that you never had before, and it all stems from, from the stress that you're in your life. And a lot of times it's from the subconscious. We put things so far behind us in our brain, we don't even remember, but certain things will trigger us. We don't know why they're triggering us because it's in our subconscious.
Exactly. Yeah, and when that happens, that's when you go forward and do stuff that you're like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm doing this. This is silly, and that's why it's because it's stored in your subconscious and in your body as well. And so it's all acting out and you feel like I have just completely lost control of myself.
100%. Now, community can be both healing and triggering. How have you designed the space to ensure safety while fostering honest dialogue?
Well, yeah, there's definitely that was the biggest thing for me when I was creating the workshop and the community is we needed to create a safe space for these women because it is really scary. And there's a lot of things I put in place to make it very private and secure, but it's really watching the women, interacting with the women. When they're in the workshop, they have access to us, every single day. If they have something coming up, it's not like, oh, you only see us, that one night. And then, what's beautiful too is once they're done with the workshop, they go into the community. And that is tightly monitored and, overseen so that people don't start saying, and the thing is that happens in these communities a lot of times is people mean well when they say stuff sometimes. So you just kind of have to watch that, and that's kind of a learning process. But it's really watching closely because that is the biggest thing is the last thing I want to do is create more hurt in a woman's life. She has come to me, she feels safe with me, and I need to protect her. And so I have a partner in this in both the workshop and the community because we are monitoring it so closely, and we don't want anything to happen. It may happen, but we're doing everything we can to protect them and make them feel safe.
I think that's wonderful. I think it's very important for people to have a safe space to be able to go somewhere where they could share their stories, share what they're going through in life, share something just happened today, and then just to have support from other women, and then maybe even other women can relate and they can, share their advice too, one woman's perspective might be different from another woman's perspective, but it doesn't hurt to hear other people's advice. And sometimes you just have to be open to it. It doesn't mean you have to accept the advice. But you know what? It's there. And and just having someone saying, I feel for you, I care for you, I'm there to support you. Those words go a long way. Sometimes you don't have answers for people. My biggest thing that I learned from my aunt was when my aunt was going through a lot in life, she just wanted someone to listen, and she had a story, she was talking to me one day and she's like, I don't want advice. I don't want anything, I don't want people to answer me back. She goes, I just need someone to listen. That's all she wanted when she was going through her tough times in life. She just wanted 2 ears and some attention. And she just wanted to be able to have that person she could just open up to and share. And I think it's so important that we have that in our life.
It is, and that's the thing in the community is everybody's kind of in the same boat. And there's ways that they can connect with us as leaders, and then there's ways that they can connect with one another, so they don't, they can start building relationships and, so it, 'cause it is, it's a lonely journey. It's a very lonely journey if you don't make effort.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And I think that is true for any condition, any problem, anything. If you don't have somebody and you feel alone, that's when the anger starts. That's when depression starts. That's when that's why every condition and has a suicide rate, because people, when they don't get the help and they get to that anger, depression, after that depression, some people just feel there's no quality of life. I don't have I'm just But once you have people around you, I understand you, I'm here for you, what can I do for you? Life changes, and once you start that therapy, once you start speaking, and once you start sharing with people, life starts to turn around.
It definitely does. Absolutely.
Can you share a success story that illustrates the power of collective healing?
Well, I guess my own life. So far, that's been, I think, the most successful one. Yeah, I mean, that's really been my experience, but I have witnessed others heal as well, some that have gone through the workshop. And like my partner in crime for the workshop, she too has gone through a lot of healing. Yeah, but it's funny that it's my own life, because I do. I look back on how I was then to where I am now, and it's so vastly different. But I can go right back to that place, you know, and it doesn't affect me anymore, but I can certainly go back and kind of feel those moments. But I mean, seriously, I'm actually really proud of what I've done in my life. I still have a long way to go, but yeah, I'm really proud of what I've done in my life, and it's just been grinding and doing the next step. And so much of it is baby steps. That's one thing I want to tell the listeners. So much of this is baby steps. Big steps come along, but it's more common to do the baby steps, and it's much easier to manage. And once I realized and I learned that, because I used to get so overwhelmed by everything that I would just shut down. And once I started saying, okay, well, let's just take this little step here, and then I'm able to do it, and I'm like, okay, I feel good. I feel good. Let me take the next one. That's what's really helped me. And so, you know, like I said, I'm not lonely anymore. And that's because I've done a lot of work, and I actually enjoy my own company. Where I used to want to crawl out of my own skin and get away from myself. That's how bad I felt. So I'm my shining example. I hope that answers the question.
It does answer the questions. So, what daily micro practices do you recommend for survivors who still feel on edge in everyday life?
I would definitely say to journal, write the stuff that's in your head, because things that are in our head can fester and become in our head a lot worse than they really are. So journaling is really important. It's really important to have your quiet time if you want to meditate, but just have some quiet time and sit with yourself. And movement. Movement is critical. Critical, critical. Get outside, get some fresh air. Like when I'm done with this, if the weather is not, oh, it's nice out actually, I'm probably going to go for a walk, a real quick walk, just to get out, get the vitamin D. But start looking within. Because, like you said, you need to start having a relationship with yourself. And that's what's really going to help your healing, because others didn't treat you right. And you weren't taught how to treat yourself right. You weren't taught. You were taught how to abuse yourself. And so now you need to learn how to treat yourself better, because your other relationships aren't going to get better really until this is better.
Exactly, 100%. And I love journaling. I think journaling is such a powerful tool. I used to journal all the time. And then when I get to a point where I've overcome what I was journaling about, I'd rip the pages out of the journal. And it was a way of me saying that I've overcome this part of my life. I am now in a new stage of my life.
I
And it
love
was a way,
that.
it was a way of just getting it out. And then as I was getting ready to rip the pages, I would look and I'm like, wow, I've come a long way. And it's like, I think it's so important that we all give ourselves a pat on the back and give ourselves credit or reward ourselves, whether it's a walk outside, whether it's a bath or whatever you want to do, go for a massage, whatever, you want to reward yourself for getting to the next step. It doesn't matter how big or how small, give yourself credit and reward yourself in some way.
That one's critical. That's huge. Yes. Yeah. Because you're acknowledging it and you're giving yourself a pat on your back, and you deserve it.
Yes, 100%. Now, childhood abuse often hides in plain sight. What are the warning signs that you think teachers, coaches, or neighbors should look for? Because a lot of times things, I feel like the school systems lack when it comes to teaching the teachers and principals and all that stuff. They teach them how to teach and do their job, but there are a lot of things that they should also understand and they should look for. If a kid's acting out, if a kid's not behaving, if a kid's hurting themselves or another kid, there should be signs and things to look for and actions, to take that are going to help the child. Because if they're getting abused too at home, they don't want, they're going to be afraid, for their parents to know. But what do you say is some red flags and things that that people could look for, especially in the teaching and school district?
Well, and I know that the schools are starting to get a little bit better about teaching about trauma and what to look for. But you're right. I mean, my thing is, kids act out for a reason. People act out for a reason. You don't wake up one day and you're just a jerk. That's not how it works. You know, you don't wake up and you just decide to act out. And so if a child is acting different, it could be they're quiet. It could just be all of a sudden they're isolating and they're quiet and they're not playing. It could be that, like you say, they're acting out. They're, getting rambunctious and getting in trouble a lot more. But if there's a change in behavior, that is the first thing. The other thing is make a safe space for these kids. Make a safe space for them to come to. I didn't have that. So I kept it to myself. I mean, even when my mom died, the counselors didn't even reach out to me at school. So that's some of the stuff that they need to do. They need to be more in tune with these kids. But that's the biggest thing I think is a red flag is the behavior is going to absolutely change and there's something to look at. And then we just need to create a safe space and get the experts in there to bring out what it is that's going on with them.
Yeah, very good advice. I like that. Now, if you could implement one policy change tomorrow to reduce childhood abuse, what would it
Ooh, a policy. No,
be?
no hitting. No hitting. Period.
Yes.
Period. There's no reason to hit a child ever. Yeah.
Yes.
So there's other ways to manage it. I brag about my one daughter-in-law a lot because she's really good about sitting down with the kids when they're she's also a teacher, but she's special. But when the kids' emotions are irregulated, she's really good about giving them time and space and a place to talk about it.
I think that's really important because we came from a generation Catholic schools used to, the nuns used to hit the kids on the hand, they get pulled by the ear, they would be that, it was normal for a parent to act out and hit their kid, somehow, but that's like one of the worst things you could do because you've just installed fear in your child. You just, you're creating a disconnect with your child, and you're hurting your child. So then in your eyes, they're not looking at a parent as a good person. They're looking at a parent, as a bad person, with fear. If I do this, I'm going to get hurt. If I, and that's not, the way to do it. And nowadays, I hear a lot of parents talking about, and teachers talking about, disciplining the children through talking to the children. Explain the situation, explain what's going on, explain why it's not right, and not using any type of way of hidden or any type of words, because verbalization could be just as abusive as physical, so
Yeah,
it's
no
using
guilt and manipulation. And yeah, because here's the thing that we have to remember. We're here to teach these children how to grow up and be adults. And one of the things that I wish the schools would do is implement emotional regulation in teaching these kids how to emotionally regulate. I mean, imagine that they don't know. They come into this world, they don't know anything, and all they know is at first to cry. And then when they're older, they act out because they don't know how to articulate what it is they need. Maybe they don't even realize what it is they need. And that's what we have to teach them. Okay, you're upset. What are you upset about? Okay, and why do you think that happened? And talk to them and help them process that. They don't just all of a sudden wake up one day and they, oh, I know how to emotionally regulate myself.
Exactly. And you know what? The one thing too is that nowadays I've noticed that there is a disconnect because of all the technology. Children are not good with communication. They, when we were young, the only way to get through was to actually communicate verbally with another human being. No matter what you did, you had to verbalize it. Where today, everything is text, everything is, on social. Yeah, and it's like you that's not you talk to kids, a lot of them don't know how to, they can't communicate well. Their skills are lacking in that area, and that needs to be improved. And even in the school systems, they're using more and more technology, and they're using the iPads and this and that. But really, they should be really working on, like you said, having some type of classes, to teach children how to emotionally, verbalize and how to deal with emotions that are inside them at the current moment. Verbally, it's so important to be able to communicate in this world, especially when they get older, that you have to know how to communicate in a productive manner in order to be a happy, joyful person who is going to succeed and reach their full potential in life.
And I know for me, one of the things when I finally got my voice back that I struggled with before was articulating. It would be very clear in my head what I wanted to say to you, but then from here to here, it would jumble up and I wouldn't make sense. And it was so frustrating. And I'm like, I know what I want to say. It's not coming out right. But as I got my voice and felt positive and good about my voice, that's when I've been able to articulate what's going on in my head. So imagine what a child goes through.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Now, one book besides your own resources, every survivor or every ally should read.
Well, there's a few. Now I can't think of it. The myth of, it's a very famous book, and it just completely it completely it's right over there on my I can't read it.
It's
But
okay.
yeah, everybody that has been in trauma will know what I'm talking about. It's a very famous book, The Myth of Normal.
We
I
could
think
put
that's
it
what it is,
in.
The Myth of Normal.
Okay. Because I could say later on we could put it in the description box and then
Yes.
people can, as a resource people could go to. Because sometimes, I found really good books that really opened my eyes up and really, it really helped me to get, a perspective on things and, those
Yeah.
aha moments. Because even if if you know how to do things, we sometimes hearing it from somebody else, doing it a different way. Kind of, it sounds like, wow, they have, I think like that, but they really, I like the way they're doing it and it actually works better than the way you're doing it, so
Exactly. Yeah,
it's
there's
really.
a lot of really good books out there. There really are. I've actually got some on my website, some that I've read that I just think are so great and helpful.
What's your website address so people could go find those books?
So I've got two. So there's Healing and Growing Hand in Hand Podcast.com, and then there's the Women's Childhood Abuse Healing Workshop. Oh no, my battery just died. Oh no, hold on. Can you hear me?
I can hear
Okay,
you.
I'm so sorry. Hold on.
So they can find all these resources on your websites.
Yes. So I've got on my website, I've got a tab called Healing Resources. So on there, I've also got some free downloads. So there's some journaling prompts. There's a healing starter kit that'll help you kind of get started. But on there, I've also got the resources of the different books. I think I've read almost every one of them. Maybe there was one I haven't read yet, but really good books, famous books that'll really help you on your healing journey.
Oh, I love that. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. The sentence you would put on every survivor's bathroom mirror, what would you put?
Does that have to be positive or negative?
I think positive. We want
Yeah.
positive.
Okay. We want positive. I've got this. I've got this.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's powerful. I like that. I like that.
Because that's what I tell
Now,
myself all the time. I've got this.
yeah, you need, like a lot of people I know use stickies. They put it on their mirrors, and the first thing they see is like either they like some people like affirmations, some people like quotes, some people just want like just like you said, I got this,
I
and
got
it's just
this.
like it's the first thing you see in the morning. Let's say if you put it in your bathroom, and it's like believe it or not, it could just change your mindset and change the way you feel, and it puts you on the right path for the rest of the day.
Yep, it definitely does. That's really important that you said that. It's really important what we fill ourselves up with at the beginning of the day. If you
Yes.
sit down and you watch news that's going to make you mad, guess what? You're going to be
Yeah.
mad all day.
You're gonna be mad all day for sure. It's gonna pull you down. Definitely. That's why they say like when you the seven people you surround yourself with, that's who you will become. So it's like if you really want to have a positive life, if you really want to be with people that are gonna bring you up, then look at the seven people around you and make sure those seven people are people that are positive. That can be your rock that will elevate you and help you grow.
Exactly. So true.
Now, once again, I want you to tell everybody what your podcast is and where they can find it, and also your workshop dates and your community doors. What's coming up next for you?
Okay, so you can find the workshop on the website, which I shared, Healing and Growing Hand in Hand Podcast. You can find it on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel. I also have an expert series. It's called Experts Explain Trauma on my YouTube channel
I like
that,
that.
yeah, that brings lots of experts on to answer one question and give tips. It's been really phenomenal. I've had wonderful guests. And so you can find that on YouTube and Spotify, Apple, and other famous, I don't know, other stations. And then the workshop, we're beginning on September 2nd. And so we're taking signups now. It's a small group, very small group. So it sells out, it goes, closes up fast. So, and then the community also, the women's healing community, you can join at any time. It's $9.99 a month. And then you've got all the support you can get.
I love that. I love that. Now, from today's conversation, if you wanted to emphasize on a couple important factors, what are some things you want people to walk away with this conversation we had today?
That going back to you're not too old and you're not broken, that you can heal, that it's, you can find a support system that will help you and you can get better. I'm telling you, my life is so much better than I ever imagined. And it's not because I'm special, it's just
Yeah.
because I did the work.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I love this. This is awesome. I thank you so much for coming on the show today. You've been wonderful, and I
Thank
really appreciate
you.
you. And thank you so much for sharing your story. It takes a lot of courage. You know, people don't realize when people come on and share stories, it's not always easy to go, go back in time and to share stories that are personal and that have brought a lot of emotion in our life and change in our life. But I commend you for, sharing your story and also using it as a tool to help other people. You know, I think that's really important. You know, sometimes I feel like, journeys happen for a reason. We may ask ourselves why did this happen? You know, but then I feel like sometimes, things happen for a reason, and we wouldn't be here, me and you, helping others if we didn't go through what we did when we were younger, and the things
Exactly.
that we had to overcome. So, I commend you for, rising above the chaos, overcoming your obstacles, and now making positive change in the world. So, thank you very much for just being you and for what you do.
Well, thank you for having me here. I feel honored.
Thank you for being here. You have a great day.
You too.